Corporate bosses across America have been sputtering in outrage at you working stiffs this summer, spewing expletives about the fact that while the U.S. economy has been coming back, you haven't. Labor shortage, they squeal, lazily accusing the workforce of mass laziness. They charge insultingly that millions of workers got used to laying around during the pandemic, noting that there is now an abundance of jobs open for everything from restaurant workers to nurses. The bosses and their political dogs bark that you people need to get back in the old harness and start pulling again. Adding a nasty bite to their bark, several GOP governors cut off unemployment benefits to people, hoping to force them to work. Other businesses have proffered signing bonuses, free dinner coupons, and other lures, while such notoriously mingy outfits as McDonald's and Walmart have even upped their wage scale in an effort to draw workers. Yet, no go. In fact, to the astonishment of the economic elite, the employment flow this year is going the other way. Record numbers of current workers in all sorts of jobs in every section of the country are voluntarily walking away. There's even an official economic measurement of this phenomena called the quits rate, and it is surging beyond anything our economy has experienced in modern history. In April, 4 million workers quit. In May, another 3.6 million left. And in June, 3.9 million said adios. The quits are so unexpected and so widespread that pundits have started dubbing this year the Great Resignation. This is Jim Hightower saying, what's wrong with people? Why are such staggering numbers of Americans failing to do their jobs? But wait, maybe that's the wrong question. Maybe the corporate system's jobs are failing the people. Consider this. The most common comment by those who are walking out is, I hate my job. The Hightower Radio Lowdown is brought to you by the Lowdown Happy Hour, live streamed from the Chat and Chew Cafe. Details at HightowerLowdown.org.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. Our week wrap-up in review bit, the All-Star Panel. Going to talk a little bit about what's going on with Afghanistan, what's going on with, well, the crazy people in going to the Capitol, and, well, Texas and Florida, where it seems like lots of craziness going on. But here to share some thoughts on what's going on with the country. Our all-star panel, Rich Ojeda of No Dems Left Behind, national spokesperson, Sarah Burris, reporter over at Raw Story, and Scott Dworkin, co-founder of the Democratic Coalition. Guys, thanks for taking time for us.
Yo.
Let's start off with what's going on in Afghanistan. What's now not going on. We're out. We won. It's over, in my view. It's time to declare victory, move forward. Rich, let's start with you. Thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is something that needed to happen. I love the fact that the day after our troops finally left, the Taliban are disappointed because they realize that all the equipment that was on the Karzai airfield has been basically destroyed. And they felt that, you know, since they're now a government, that was supposed to be a goodwill, a gift to their government from ours. So they're a little angered about that. But, you know, there are still some things. There's coordination that's taken place. So there are still people that are able to get out. And the Taliban are saying that they're going to allow that to continue happening. So I'm excited about that. And yes, it's time for us to end this forever war. And even though, you know, we accomplished everything we needed to accomplish, we killed Osama bin Laden, we never lost a fight. I'm not going to walk away from this, and I'm telling all of my brothers and sisters to hold your head high because we didn't lose.
Unquestioningly, we accomplished the mission, did what we were supposed to do, and now we're out. And I'm of the mindset we should be having the parades and kissing the babies and doing all the things that you do when something like this ends. But it's sad, Sarah, because there's so many people out there who want to find defeat and want to point fingers simply because Joe Biden was the one who finally had the courage to get us out.
That's the thing I was going to say about Rich's comment is that, you know, we really did achieve all of the things that we set out to achieve. And it seems like the right wing really wants us to fail. They want this to be a big failure. They You know, after we left, the whole thing about the equipment is they were just like, oh my God, we left all this equipment and now they're going to be coming after us with all of this machinery that we gave them. And then you find out that none of it actually worked. And so there are all of these things that the right seems to be complaining about. And it just takes a couple days and all of a sudden there's like, oh, we were wrong. So that has been somewhat satisfying, but, you know, meanwhile, we have a congressman from Oklahoma who tried to sneak into Afghanistan because he decided he was going to be some kind of super trooper. So,
no, he didn't want to sneak in. He wanted to bully his way in.
Yeah, and then after that didn't work, after he threatened some people at an embassy, I don't know if he just went home with his head in his hands or if he tried to cross the border and got scared whenever he actually faced off against the Taliban. I don't know. But it's pretty much the most Oklahoma congressman thing that I've ever heard happen. So
yeah, and because he couldn't take his money with him is the reason they wouldn't bring him in, because evidently Tajikistan or however you say it, they only allowed you to bring so much bribe money into the country, and he wanted to bring more, and they said no. And I got to think he knew that so that he would get this attention, so he could look like Mark Wayne Rambo. Without actually having to be Rambo. Scott, I wanted to get your thoughts. I mean, the right, they really tried to put the stink on Biden and the military, tried to pull defeat out of the jaws of victory. They're silent now, but, you know, I guess that's what they do, right?
So many lies happening, and they're disgusting because they're attacks on our military, they're attacks on the United States of America, they're attacks on our president, the White House, Congress. It's an attack on our country in itself, the lies and the propaganda. They're working basically in tandem. This is sort of how they did it with Russia and Putin, but they're doing it with the Taliban and ISIS now. So they've, you know, we have the American Taliban and vanilla ISIS all working together here. And it's kind of like weird. Donald Trump Jr. is spreading the same lies as ISIS is. You know what I mean? Like, that's out there. That's a little too crazy. And now it's a terrorist threat to our nation. And that's a serious threat that DHS has made clear over the last few days. And obviously the right-wing coverage has been just atrocious, because they don't, you know, as Sarah mentioned, they do kind of like back off from it sometimes, but they don't correct themselves. They don't admit that they were at fault. They don't admit that they lied. And that's one of the biggest problems. So you have Don Jr. posting a banner, and we have our legal team working on this right now, posting a banner of a guy being hung from the helicopter when that wasn't what happened in the first place. That's not even a true story. It's an entire conspiracy theory where they're trying to act like, you know, this is Biden gave them this helicopter and they hung a dude to prove that they're in power. The whole story was completely made up, and they were not docked for it. We need social media to take immediate action on any of these liars, because this is going to cause another uproar. This is going to cause another insurrection. This is going to cause this is the new big lie. I mean, every day there's a new big lie that they tell, but now they're lying about Afghanistan. Biden did not give away everything to the Taliban. There were already 5 bases shut down, and there was one left. There were 3,500 troops left, and there were 80,000 members of the Taliban and thousands of members of the ISIS surrounding them. So did you want thousands of troops to be taken hostage, or did you want us to import more troops? You know, it just didn't make any sense. A lot of this doesn't make any sense. It's all going to come back to bite them, and it's really pathetic, and I feel sorry for them at this point. But there should be a price to pay for all these people spreading lies, because it really hurts America in the long run for years to come.
No, and I stepped into one of those big lies this week. The guy famous for Pizzagate, the Pizzagate guy, put out that Joe Biden left behind dogs, so he hates dogs. And I said, no, we didn't leave any service dogs behind. The U.S. Right. military did not leave any service dogs behind. And yeah. they went crazy. Oh, no, you hate dogs. And what's wrong with you? And then you got the pizza guy who is pushing Russian television propaganda for the Taliban to get people to donate money to the Taliban to take care of these dogs that I don't even know if they're there. But this is what they do. And it's really, it's about the money and the grift, but it's soulless. And I want to ask you, Rich, because, you know, I look at this dog story, which has just got me just just beyond fumed because we didn't leave a single U.S. military dog behind.
No. We absolutely, the money that goes into training our dogs in the military is next level. We would leave none behind. You know, but this is just another thing that they want to grab and try to throw at us. And this is the downside to that. Is it's like, you know, Ted Cruz did the same thing. Ted Cruz had a tweet with the helicopter that was in the distance. And then he come back and he finally said, well, you know, it might not be accurate. Okay, well, you're saying it might not be accurate, but they know that the majority of the people that are listening to their garbage, they're not listening. They're not on Twitter. They're still going to continue believing that that helicopter really took place and that we've left service dogs. You know, let me tell you, every soldier that has a dog with them, that is literally just as important as their weapon. And absolutely, they would never leave it behind.
Now, what do you say to this?
And once again, I got to say, all the equipment that was left in Afghanistan was left with the Afghan military and the Afghan police, not our equipment. We brought our stuff home.
And the stuff that we did leave was disabled. I mean, it's not like we left them Black Hawk helicopters.
Over 150 pieces of equipment on the airfield were destroyed before we left.
Because we had to choose between bringing people home or bringing that equipment home. We chose people. But here's the thing. The reason I bring up the dog thing is because people were rabid. People were angry. They were, and look, as they should be. We shouldn't be harming dogs. We shouldn't be leaving dogs behind. But they were rabid. And I want them to take that passion and go, you know what? We should be taking care of the people we brought back. We should be taking care of the people who for the last 20 years we've neglected. All of the homeless vets, all of the veterans who have been suffering from drug and alcohol problems. Like when I was a kid, you know, all those soldiers that were dumped into the housing project I lived in the middle 70s with just broken minds and bodies and addiction problems were just dumped. How about we focus our rage and our help on those folks? Sarah, I want to get your thoughts on that because, you know, we've basically, I don't think we've done enough for these people and we need to do more.
No, we haven't. And now we're bringing, you know, how many thousands of Afghan refugees that, you know, basically come out of 20 years of war, 20 years of living in a war zone of, you know, into the United States. Imagine the culture shock, first of all. And you know, there are a lot of things that we should be doing to take care of our soldiers, the refugees, everybody that was involved in this. And it just seems like a lot of these crazy Republicans are more interested in everything but, and especially the refugees. They definitely don't want to take care of them. So there are all of these conversations about, you know, people being shocked over dogs, but then people aren't shocked about, you know, whatever translators couldn't get their paperwork done in time. So it's really frustrating.
It is frustrating. Scott, I want you to jump in on this.
It's kind of weird. I guess it kind of connects to the fact that they care about these children before they're born. And then they don't afterwards, that it's your problem. So like we've used the Afghan people of Afghanistan and they can't come here though, because all of a sudden they say, but we have COVID and they can bring in COVID. Like they get worried about diseases. It's the same racist, hateful rhetoric that they use of everything. And it's they want to spread all these lies. I think they're just tripping on themselves all the lies now, because I just wish that there was a mechanism for, again, them to be held accountable. And right now there just isn't. So it's on us to call out all the lies and tell the truth about it and spout that. And so it's important that you and everybody else actually points out that is a lie that does not exist. And you have to repeat that over and over again, because as Rich said, like Ted Cruz posted that thing and nobody saw his response to it. Nobody, they only saw the fact that he said, oh, look at this. Like, and he's sharing a video with the world as a United States Senator from the state of Texas, who's basically saying these terrorists are hanging this person using Biden's helicopter. And then it's turned into a conspiracy theory now. And no matter what they say at this point, it's ivermectin. Like, that's the truth. That's the only way. That's the only thing that matters. And it's just complete nonsense. It's worse propaganda than it's ever been. And we need to put an end to it all.
I'm right there with you. But here's the thing. What I've been getting from people is, you know, we should have stayed another month. We should have stayed another 2 months so that we got everybody. We brought the dogs back, and we could have stayed another month. Rich, what do you say to we could have stayed another month?
No, we couldn't have. The agreement was the 31st of August. That's it. The Taliban, and they even said, you know, Joe Biden actually was talking about potentially pushing it back, and the Taliban said no. So that's it. We got 120 plus thousand people out of that country. That was a Herculean effort that they did. And we should be absolutely as proud as can be of our service members, our Air Force, you know, the things that they did. When I saw that C-17 Globemaster with over 800 people on it, I literally was shocked, because I understand, as a person who's worked in aircraft as a master parachutist and heavy dropping, you know, things out of the back of an aircraft, I know the importance of making sure that everything is weighed properly. And when I saw that, I was like, that is a loadmaster's nightmare. But you know what? They did it. And they went all the way to Ramstein. They went all the way to Qatar. They dropped these people off and went right back and did another batch. And they did it over and over and over again. These people are heroes for what they've done. And you know what? We did everything right. And people can sit and they can gripe about it all they want. You know, they wasn't there, and that's just the way that it is.
Yeah, but Biden was right. You know, and let me throw it out to both you, Scott and Sarah. Biden was right. He had two choices, because he got an extra 4 months out of what Trump had agreed to, which was a May 1st deadline to get out. He got until the end of August. He had the two choices, either get out, as we did, and thank goodness he did, or escalate and send thousands more people into harm's way, which could mean, you know, hundreds, if not thousands, of more deaths and injuries and trillions of dollars and 20 more years. Do you see a third option, anyone?
No. I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you come up with, you know, what if the Taliban says no and we stay, then you're going to have how many troops come in to protect all of those people. Like, the way that it was negotiated, from what I've read, is that the Taliban was basically running security, and they were deciding, you know, who was getting in and who wasn't. This everybody assumes that, you know, the second we left, that that the Taliban, it was like they just closed the door on the country. I just think if people really actually read about what was going on the ground, they might understand that, you know, the Taliban was just, you know, playing nice until the 31st, and they weren't going to play nice after the 31st. I don't understand why people think that somehow everything was going to be okay. Like, these people that don't like us, you know, and want us out of the country, somehow they're just going to be like, oh, no, it's cool. Like, have some brunch. You know, like, that's not how that works.
And Globemasters are big targets. C-17 Globemasters are big targets for RPGs. And after the 31st, we would have probably been ducking those nonstop.
If we stayed longer, they claim that they'd have a right to attack us, that they were invaders in their country. At this point, I mean, from what I gather, we were being surrounded. The fact that there weren't more terrorist attacks is a miracle. Absolute miracle. The fact American troops were not taken hostage, the fact that American civilians weren't taken hostage, that is a masterclass in diplomacy like that. And that's what happened. So you hear Republicans complaining because, you know, Blinken would come out and he'd be like, oh, the Taliban helped us with this. So, you know, maybe they're giving him credit so we can get out of there without our heads getting cut off. You know what I mean? Like, at some point, you have to realize that not everything is how it seems in public. He's not going to tweet about it. That's not what this is about. There's a reason why people were able to get through the Taliban without them saying, you know what, we're going to take these 24 Americans and ask for $5 million. You see what I'm saying? Like, it could have been so much worse. And I know the terrorist attack there was absolutely awful, but it could have been disastrous beyond measure. And we were surrounded. We were not in control. Americans love to be in control. We weren't. We lost the country. It was gone. It had already been given away by Trump. We had to get out of there. And what's done is done. It's over. We can't go back on this.
And so, I don't want to go back. I don't want to go back. Good on Joe Biden for getting us out. We won. It's time to move on and take care of our soldiers and take care of this country and move us in the right direction. I got to take a quick break here. Hope you guys will stick around through the break. If you got any questions, thoughts, comments, love to hear it. Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Going to take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You'll listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people from the talk. Standing up, and the union gives a voice to win on The Rick Smith Show. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1934. That was the day nearly 500,000 textile workers from Maine to Alabama walked off the job in a general strike. The United Textile Workers had launched an organizing campaign the year before. Within months, their membership had grown from 15,000 to well over 250,000. Working conditions and pay were abysmal. Normal work weeks averaged 55 hours. Child labor was widespread, and workers were always in fear of mill closings, pay cuts, and firings for suspected union activity. In the South, the industry had essentially been in a depression since the early 20s. The key issue was the stretch out. Workers were routinely expected to complete an increasing amount of work at the same rate and wage. For a brief moment, workers hoped their conditions would change when President Roosevelt signed the Code of Fair Competition the previous summer. It raised wages, limited hours, and prohibited child labor. It also allowed for union organizing. But the mill owners maneuvered around the code effectively, and the Textile Relations Board refused most workers' complaints. Fed up, workers walked out of the mill by the hundreds of thousands. They used the flying squadron tactic employed by Minneapolis Teamsters earlier that year, traveling from town to town, from mill to mill, calling workers out on strike. Mill owners were shocked. Within days, strikers confronted thousands of police and scabs. More than 40,000 National Guardsmen were called out in 16 states. Over the course of the strike, 16 people would be killed and hundreds more injured. After 22 days, union leaders called off the strike when President Roosevelt promised a government survey of industry conditions. It was an outrage, a betrayal, and a defeat felt for decades. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So last week, the 50th insurrectionist pled guilty. And I think only a handful have actually been sentenced. And I got to tell you, I'm not thrilled with the length of the sentences. I want to see maximum time. I want to see real penalties. A lot of time behind bars, a lot of huge fines. Set an example so that no one does it again. And I understand, I guess here in the next couple of days, the shaman, he's going to plead guilty, and he's gonna turn. So we'll see what the shaman, who's not thrilled with being called the shaman, what he's got to say. Anyway, I want to welcome back our all-star panel. Rich Ojeda from No Dems Left Behind, Sarah Burris from Raw Story, and Scott Dworkin from the Democratic Coalition. Guys, thanks for sticking around.
You bet.
So what do you think of this? I mean, I'm seeing these folks, they're pleading guilty, as they should, because they don't have they don't have anything to stand on. But I just don't think the penalties are enough so far. And I know we're going to get the big fish down the road, and we're eventually going to get them. But I think that the message right now is, I don't know, not so great. Scott, we'll start with you.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote about this in Newsweek this week. I was very furious about Kevin McCarthy's threat about, the investigation, everything going on. This is all, you have Madison Cawthorn again calling for bloodshed, basically, or actually literally. And we're dealing with a terrorist organization and a terrorism investigation. This is not this is ongoing terrorism that's constantly happening. Our biggest threat to our country is not outside of it, it's inside of it. And I think that, as I've said in this op-ed I wrote, it has to be made an example of. It may be counter to this administration. I'm fine speaking out against the administration on this, especially because there needs to be accountability. People need to be made example of, because that is how you deter people from ever doing it again. And without that, we do need some trials. You can't just make a deal with everybody, especially people like QAnon. Like, if he's going to flip and he actually has something to offer, great. But this is not just about what happens behind the scenes. You can't just bury this. It's got to be public prosecutions. These people have to be able to testify publicly in front of Congress. And we have to be able to get the most out of it, because, again, as I've spoken to other Capitol Police officers, some whom have testified publicly in front of the committee, it absolutely will happen again. And they are not prepared for what another insurrection. And the next one, I would assume it's not going to be flagpoles. It's not going to be, you know, they're going to go to Texas and then they'll just ride in to D.C. I would assume that it would be more heavily armed, even though there were guns in the crowd last time. They did not apparently bring it into the building. So it's, we have a ways to go, but it's embarrassing the way it's been set up so far. What I've been reassured of, though, from people who work at the DOJ currently, is that things are moving at lightning speed behind the scenes. So we should see some action in the next few weeks, but I don't trust any of that. So I publicly want to make sure that everybody calls the White House and Congress and pressures everybody to make sure that everyone's made an example out of, so that this is something that never happens again.
Yeah, but here's the thing, Scott, and Sarah, this is for you. I mean, you know, they're talking about another rally on September 18th. I'm dubbing that, I think everyone is, Insurrection 2.0, because they're laying the groundwork. The expectations are there. You got Madison Cawthorn and others out there barking. Any concern that this is where this is gonna turn into?
Absolutely, I'm completely terrified. I'm expecting it to be bad, and I wonder how many of these people who are making plea deals are now basically going to get out of jail, or be on probation, or be finished with probation, and basically just hitch a ride to Washington and do it all over again. The thing that I am the most furious about is, yes, we have a January 6th commission, select committee, that's doing the investigations that are important. We still don't have laws governing domestic terrorism in the United States. I don't understand why Congress and the Senate have not said, oh, gee, we need specific laws to, you know, like a hate crime law would give harsher penalties to somebody based on the intention of the crime. I think that we need something similar in the United States. We have it for international issues. We have it for, you know, a lot of, we don't have that kind of law on the book, is my point.
And, yeah, don't we have insurrection laws, though? I mean, wasn't that what that was? I mean, they were trying to stop the certification of a presidential election.
And my question is, how do you have something declared an insurrection? You know, is that something the president has to, you know, file some sort of executive order saying this is an insurrection? Does the Justice Department have to file some specific something in court and say this is an insurrection? I just don't understand why we have these laws in place that are giving these guys, you know, basically a parking ticket for beating police officers.
Yep.
If they were brown, that wouldn't be happening.
No, you're right on. But for me, this comes back to Merrick Garland, and I don't think they've done enough fast enough. You know, my push is on him. You got to use the power that you've got as the top cop. But Rich, here's the thing: on September 18th, I don't expect the Capitol Police to be as unprepared. I don't expect the grounds to be as unprepared. I expect this to be very Trumpian. I expect this to be heavy, to possibly show these wannabe civil warriors. Because I've heard so many people recently saying, you know, there's another civil war coming. I think you line the street with the National Guard, show what real military power looks like, and hopefully these nimwits get a clue.
Well, we shouldn't have been, you know, caught with our pants down on January the 6th. 4 years under Donald Trump and watching these people at his rallies should have been all we needed to see to realize that we need to make sure that our Capitol was fortified. So now in this, you know, insurgency 2.0, we need to be ready. If the National Guard is not already there, then something is wrong, and somebody is really, really trying to make sure that these people succeed. Our police need to be there. There needs to be a line drawn in the sand. And if you cross it, you will be dealt with accordingly. We can never allow this to happen again. We cannot allow it to happen again. And we need to be firm. And that's just the way that it has to be. And we need to go after these people. You know, to sit here and watch Kevin McCarthy and sit here and watch Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert and them threatening, you know, the phone companies. I mean, first off, if you are innocent, you have nothing to worry about. These people are guilty. They know that the moment that the people of this country get to see the conversations behind the scenes, they're going to go, oh my gosh, Lauren Boebert was actually live tweeting Nancy Pelosi's whereabouts to the leaders of the Proud Boys, to the leaders of the 3%ers. They're going to see these things. They're going to see that these people were a part of this whole entire thing. And let me tell you something, every one of them who are a part of this must be dealt with accordingly. I don't want to see them remaining. I don't want them to be removed from their committees. They need to be prosecuted for this. They participated in an active coup that literally almost overthrown our government. And if we don't deal with that accordingly, we absolutely are allowing it to happen again. It's time for the Democrats to start fighting with brass knuckles and put the pillows away.
I'm right there with you. But here's the thing. You've got Representative Andy Biggs coming out now saying that he wants Kinzinger and Liz Cheney taken off the commission. And I'm like, why? Why do you want them taken off the commission, Andy? What could they possibly have to offer? What kind of comments did you possibly make where you thought the room was secure? Scott, why do they want these two off this committee so bad?
Because they are making it bipartisan, which makes it hard to attack the committee in the first place. And it's already hard enough. Now they made a great move of Liz Cheney naming her a vice chair of the committee. And so it now has a spokesperson from the Republican Party as a member of the committee. As I've said before, I believe that Kinzinger, Cheney, Romney, people who voted for the impeachment will eventually take over the Republican Party if there is one left. Now, you know, in regards to the committee itself, I've been assured that they're going to get those phone records. And what the slip up today was, they probably already have them, wink, because the FBI does. And we knew that already. It was reported a long time ago that happened. So I also have spoken to some technology executives who said that without question, we're going to give them everything that they need without, like, no problem whatsoever. I guess they have no power. Republicans have no power here. It is a weak threat. It's a sign of weakness because it's desperation. Because what are you going to get out of that? You're threatening corporations. You're threatening Congress. And you're saying, we'll remember we're in control. Great. This is a great reminder why you should never, ever be in power. This is why you should never, ever be speaker. This is why you'll never be speaker. You'll never be president. And this is, but it's going to happen again. If we don't take action, there's a good chance that Trump ends up in the White House again, and I don't think he'll ever leave. And so we need to think about that. We need to think about the fact that they'll exploit Congress and also abuse their power directly to prosecute people. I always think about it like this. What would McConnell do in this situation if it were reversed? He is like, people would have already been arrested in Congress. You know what I mean? And that is the kind of motion that we need. We don't need any of these white gloves anymore. Put on the boxing gloves, figuratively, and go after them. And this is very clear, even if it's just conspiracy, because they did meet to speak about this. And just as if it's a concert that broke out and there were fights and somebody got killed there, same thing would happen where the people who were the organizers of the event, the funders of the event, would be arrested already. And so, and Sarah made a good point, I believe, that if it were not just white people, you know, their doors would have been knocked down before they even got to D.C. that day. So it's, I think we have a long road to go here, but this is going to end badly unless we make some action now, right now, especially against members of Congress that are traitors.
No, there's no question about it. But I look at this and then, you know, back to the comments on, you know, we'll remember. To me, that is a threat that should be investigated.
Yes.
Without question. And,
absolutely.
And because you can't have politicians using that kind of rhetoric, because what you get then, Sarah, is you get this guy out in eastern part of Pennsylvania who's running for a county executive position, this Steve Lynch guy who said he's going to get 20 of his strong men. The strong men are going to go in and they're going to throw the people off the school board and they're going to put their people in. And then they're going to vote down the mask mandates and they're going to take over. It's that kind of mentality from the minions and the dimwits that hear Kevin McCarthy, that hear Madison Cawthorn, that hear all these people who are throwing this heated rhetoric that they know is BS, that they're just feeding these people to get them riled up for votes. But it's turning into real action, and it's freaking dangerous.
That's exactly what Donald Trump built in this new Republican Party. That is the kind of MAGA mentality that that I think these Republicans feel like they have to adopt if they want to get the kind of money out of people that they want. I don't know the degree to which they honestly want violence again, because I think that would be a PR disaster for them. But it sure as heck does great fundraising for them. So that kind of violent rhetoric, brings in the cash. And that's why you see Marjorie Taylor Greene saying stuff like that over and over and over again. She's never going to have any power. She's never going to have any influence. But by golly, she's going to have a whole heck of a lot of money in a super PAC that then she can buy her way into influence and into the party. The other thing too, I was going to say, is you were talking about the charges for a lot of these guys and the phone records that the FBI already has. A lot of these deals, I've been reading through some of the deals that the DOJ, whenever they publish them, and a lot of the deals seem to be about getting access to their phones. So getting access to a lot of the communications, a lot of the WhatsApp stuff, some of the Facebook Messenger conversations. And so I wonder how much they already have in terms of social media, because we know that we have heard reports that that some of the Republicans are coordinating with these guys. So I wonder how much the FBI already has on these guys that they then can fork over to Congress.
Yeah. No, excellent point. And that researcher who has all of Gabs, all of those Gab, whatever they call them, little Gabs or whatever, has every bit of the threats, every bit of the we're going to go and there's going to be, we're going to stack up bodies if they're going to take my guns. It's crazy. But Rich, you know, we hear this kind of rhetoric all the time. And what's interesting about Stephen Lynch, the guy who's running for county executive, who's going to go in there with his strong men. Like many bullies, the second you poke them in the chest, they backpedal quickly, as Mr. Lynch did. This is a moment where I think Democrats have to pull up their big boy and big girl panties, stiffen up the spine, and get ready to push back.
Well, absolutely. You know, it's like, guess what? Democrats own guns, too. We just don't have to run around and wear them and wave them in people's faces all the daggone time. You know, these people are cowards. They want to be the ones that are screaming and yelling the most, but at the end of the day, when it's time to knuckle up, well, they obviously step back and say, well, you it really wasn't what I meant. You know, this is absolutely sickening, and you're right. You know, it's actually also quite scary to see so many people in this country, you know, that are willing to come out and throw those threats out there like that. And, you know, what that does to that Board of Education, I mean, some of those people on the Board of Education or, you know, little old ladies that are retired school teachers and stuff like that, you know, they fear these people, and that's what these people want. That right there, they feel like they've won because of that. But it's not exactly like you're really a, you know, you're not really a solid dude. You know, I have no respect for that guy whatsoever. You know, he wants other people. He's the kind of guy that wants to run his mouth and hope that those 20 guys will run in there and do the things that he's saying. But mark my words, he won't.
Nope, you're absolutely right. And it's one of these things, I got to be honest, you know, you push it, poke a bully in the chest, they usually back up. And this is where, you know, looking at what's going on in our school boards and looking at all the things that are going on with all these people running their mouths, we better get organized and defend our school boards. Going to take a quick break right here. You got any thoughts, questions, comments, want to hear it? You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. You got a question for one of our guests, by all means, hit me up and we'll make sure we get them to them. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two.
On this day in labor history, the year was 1893. That was the day that the International Brotherhood of Boilermakers and Iron Shipmakers of America was founded in Chicago. This joined two earlier boilermaker unions into one. They decided to establish their headquarters in Kansas City, Kansas. 2 years later, the Boilermakers affiliated with the American Federation of Labor. The union represents members of 250 lodges in the United States and Canada. At the turn of the 20th century, the Boilermakers had about 8,500 members. But their membership expanded, especially during World War II, as shipbuilding grew for the war. By 1944, there were more than 350,000 Boilermakers. In 1954, they merged with the International Brotherhood of Blacksmiths, Drop Forgers, and Helpers, and expanded their name to include these groups of workers. But what exactly is a boilermaker? According to the union's website, the term can have many meanings. It might refer to a Purdue University student or alumni, whose football team started going by the name of the Boilermakers in 1891. Or, Boilermaker might refer to dropping a shot of whiskey into a draft beer and drinking it all at once. But for the labor movement, a Boilermaker is someone that constructs and repairs boilers and the other workers who are part of the union. These might include blacksmiths, forgers, shipbuilders, cement workers, stove workers, metal polishers, and numerous other job descriptions. The Boilermaker's logo reflects these workers. It includes images of a ship, a worker working on a boiler, and a blacksmith's anvil. Below the images are found the words unity, progress, and protection, declaring the mission of the union and its members.
Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, Baptist Hospital in Miami, evidently, the quote, and this is a Daily Beast story that caught my attention, the quote from one of the nurses who spoke on the condition of anonymity, because she didn't want to get fired, because I'm sure they would have. She said in her career, she has never bagged so many 30-something-year-olds leaving behind young kids, pregnant wives, and dying. She said, the screaming, when you have to tell the family that their 30-something-year-old is dead from the virus, the screaming and telling them that their loved ones didn't make it. She says they're exhausted because, wow, the numbers of people in their 30s. Remember, they're supposed to be the ones who are going to make it through this virus. It's supposed to be no problem. Remember the refrigerated trucks that they brought in? Remember the extra bags? Sad, sad stuff. Here to share some thoughts on what is going on in the southern U.S., the craziness of Florida and now Texas, our all-star panel, Sarah Burris of Raw Story, Rich Ojeda, national spokesperson for No Dems Left Behind, and, of course, Scott Dworkin, co-founder of the Democratic Coalition. What do you make of this, Sarah? Let's start with you. This nurse is saying, hey, I've never bagged so many 30-somethings.
Well, the sad thing is that a lot of these nurses and doctors have been going, this is their second year. They're starting on this stuff. They've been doing this since, last spring. So they're already well into their second year of handling all of this stuff. And I can't imagine how exhausted they must be. And it's sad. It is terrible. The thing about the Delta variant is that it's really, really contagious. It, it gets in your lungs faster and it wreaks havoc faster and it does worse. And the best thing that could happen to you is that you die. Because if you survive it, then you might have some serious problems for the rest of your life and not be able to walk up the stairs without running out of breath.
Yeah,
it's horrible. It's not surprising. These are the things that we've heard about a million times. We've had all of these great science people science the heck out of it and explain to us what is going on. The problem is that a lot of folks don't listen. They don't understand or they don't want to understand. And so now we have all of these, Texas and Florida are overcome with hospitalizations, and I think
Idaho's got 4 ICU beds left.
Florida reached 3 million cases. Texas today, I think, reached their millionth case. And I think Florida set another record today for the most cases in one day. Finally, the only positive thing to come out of this is that Governor Greg Abbott and Ron DeSantis, their poll numbers are finally dropping. So at least there's that. Abbott's down by 7 and DeSantis is down by 14 in the last 2 months. So at least people are starting to connect the dots from, okay, well, he's fighting mask mandates because he doesn't want to protect my children. Maybe that's a thing that we should be concerned about.
Yeah, or some of them are just dying off. Scott, I want to get your thoughts on this. This Candace Owens, this right-wing mouthpiece, evidently was denied a COVID test because the private COVID company that was doing turned them away because they said, quote, "We cannot support anyone who has proactively worked to make this pandemic worse by spreading misinformation, polarizing and discouraging the wearing of masks, and actively dissuading people from receiving life-saving vaccinations." And they turned her away, said, "Look, we work overtime. We're trying to do everything we can. You're making it worse. We're not dealing with you." While I think this is hysterical, I kind of have a problem with it. I want to get your thoughts.
I mean, I have the same thing that I've always said, is that no one should be denied a COVID test. No one should be denied the vaccine. That being said, this is a person who had no problem supporting the fact of a cake maker not serving, a gay couple or not making their cake. This is a private company. So they have that right to do so. I think they also make a great point here. That being said, just test her. You know, I mean, like it's humanity, and don't give her anything. You know what I mean? Like, don't give her a win. And at the same time, I just think that it is something that's beneath them and the people who run that organization. But I also, you have to understand how stretched thin they are and how their patience is worn thin. And they just can't take it anymore, you know? And so, like, I can see that, and they don't want this person around them. So it's not like, there's I think 7 other clinics just in the immediate area around there that you can go to get COVID tests. It's not like she can't afford to have one of those, doctors come to her house and test her. And so, like, I don't feel bad for her because she's not, like, stuck in a position. But, anybody who wants to get tested should. One of the things that is clear, Dr. Ding just made it clear that there in South Africa and elsewhere, there's another variant out there that is worse, and it's going to get worse. Might get worse if we all get vaccinated. No, it's going to get worse. So as we progress here, we're not only going to need a third shot, we're going to need an extra sort of vaccine on top of that. So other people will be so far behind. That's the scary part for them. They have to get vaccinated now in order to save their lives, because there will be a point of no return where they won't be able to be helped at all in any way. And they'll be stretching ourselves thin. So we got to make sure that, people, I guess, at this point, we just got to make sure that we just strong arm people to vaccine mandates. Like, that's all we have left, vaccine mandates.
Yeah, I'm against the idea of turning someone away, business being able to turn people away. If you're open for business, you're open for business for everybody. I don't care what it is. That's what you do. But I did find that there was an interesting series of tweets on this that I thought were really interesting. Someone said that she was turned away because she was black. And someone said, no, she was turned away because of the content of her character, which I thought was perfect. But let's go to you, Rich. Joe Rogan came out this week. Influential podcaster, someone who has been, lightly saying vaccine hesitant or downright against it. He said that he got it, and his exact quote was, "threw the kitchen sink at it." Ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, the monoclonal antibodies, maybe even some Clorox and the light up the behind. I don't know, but they threw the kitchen sink at it, Rich.
Well, first off, Joe Rogan has one of the loudest microphones across this country. And what's sad is, instead of using that to try to, promote people getting vaccinated, he's went the opposite way. You know, he's got plenty of money to be able to throw the kitchen sink at it. And most people in America are not that lucky. You know, the mere fact that he mentioned ivermectin has made me completely turn him off. You know, this is absolutely unacceptable. And yeah, okay, so you have thrown the kitchen sink at it, and I'm sure that's probably costly. But you're lucky because you have that kind of money, and the majority of people in this country do not. So I've lost a lot of respect for Joe Rogan on that. You know, we should expect more from those people that find themselves in the eye of the public, and that's exactly where he is. And it's sad. It's a shame. It shouldn't be.
Well, what's interesting is the ivermectin from people that I've talked to gives you this condition that you don't want to really be in public with. So I'm, you know, kind of going, you know, in the next MMA fight that Joe Rogan does, are we expecting an explosion?
Yeah, exactly. Well, here's another thing, too. They're saying that this ivermectin is actually eating out the inner linings of people's intestines. So this could be something that could potentially cause serious health issues for long times to come. You know, people got to understand there's a reason why the doctors are saying, do not take this. You know, we are living in the dumbest era in the history of the world. That's what we're doing right now. We are living in the middle of this, and we're watching it, you know, in real time.
And what's interesting to me is the very people who are taking the ivermectin and all of these miracle cures, the silver or, you know, whatever they sell in the buckets or whatever, they're the very people who want to repeal the Affordable Care Act and do away with pre-existing conditions. So whatever they've just given themselves will never be covered.
Yeah. Good luck with that.
Crazy, crazy stuff. I want to move over.
We really missed an opportunity with this, you guys. We could have been in business making all kinds of like tinctures and stuff with herbs in it. Totally missed an opportunity. We could be millionaires by now. Well,
but this is what the right does masterfully. I mean, right and the televangelist crowd, all of our religious charlatans, they know how to do this better than anyone, which is why they're flying around in $50 million jets, and I'm driving a 2011 Jeep.
Yeah, exactly.
I got to come up with a miracle cure I couldn't sleep at night. I just couldn't do it. I do want to change topics a little bit here because Texas did something disgusting in our Supreme Court as well. And now poor Susan Collins is disappointed that the justices that she put on the Supreme Court have done what they have done in Texas and upheld basically the banning of abortion in this country and forcing women back into back alley. Forcing working class women and poor women into back alley abortions. The rich and powerful, they're going to get what they need. But they've basically given poor and working class women basically a death sentence. Sarah, let me start with you, because this is an extra special bit of horrible, because now they've got this little clause in here that if I suspect maybe you were pregnant, I might be able to cash in.
Yeah, this is the weirdest law, and the fact that the Supreme Court didn't strike this down is concerning for not just the idea of Roe and choice. This has a lot of ripple effects. I was talking about HIPAA laws today. Because how do people know whether or not you're pregnant? They would have to get access to your medical records, which would violate HIPAA laws. They would have to force you to testify against yourself, which violates the Fifth Amendment. There are a lot of things in here that just seem a little like there's no way that this is actually going to work.
Right. No, I know this will work the way it's supposed to. Because every man that I know who's upset about abortion is, she's taking my right away. This is going to give a man the power to go, you're going to have the kid, or I'm going to turn you in, and I'm going to cash in for 10 grand.
But that's what this is about. This is about men controlling women's bodies. That's exactly what this is.
Well, congratulations. Now they can pay all the child support that they want.
There are no laws for that, Sarah.
There are, but are you going to go into a court and say, he forced me to have this child, and now, you know, guess what? Here's the baby. Bye.
I think one of the fears that we're going to see is now that Texas did it, the rest of these red states are probably going to step up and do the same thing, and the Supreme Court's going to vote the exact same way for all of them. So, I mean, that's the situation that we are in right now. And it's unacceptable. This is Taliban.
Yeah, they were just worried about, I guess they didn't care about the fine print, right? Because they're like, we'll worry about that later. And then, so they wanted to jam this through so there's an example and there's something other states can cite. I'd say dozens of states are going to make this happen in the next few months.
I hear Florida's already in the process of putting it forward.
South Dakota governor said that she's been talking about it too. But I think liberal states, I think it would be interesting to see liberal states enact this for vaccines. If Texas can say this for vaccines, then why can we not sue somebody for refusing to wear a mask, refusing a vaccine and spreading COVID to a whole bunch of people? You could sue people for having a gun because, you know, of the same kind of law. But there's a lot of stuff you could do with this, and I don't know how this is going to make any sense to the Supreme Court, but
time to stack the Supreme Court. It's time to stack the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
Do the Democrats have that kind of a spine to actually propose something like that?
I'm sure Joe Manchin doesn't.
Yeah. We don't have a Manchin, and we don't have 60 on the Senate, we'd have to abolish the filibuster, which Manchin and Sinema said that they won't do, and then stack the court, which Manchin and Sinema probably won't do either, which is strange because Sinema used to be pro-choice. I mean, yeah, so I don't understand what happened there.
Well, this comes down to it's the rhetoric between and the action. A lot of people are talking the talk. They just don't ever walk the walk. And this is this moment for Democrats, because here's the thing. If there isn't something on this that restores women's rights to choose what they do with their body, if we don't get something on voting rights, if we don't get something on infrastructure, I don't know what happens next year, because that's all the stuff that they ran on last year that got them elected.
Yeah, this is the court's supposed to be representative of America, not Gilead. And it's really right now, it's every state is going to be the Wild West, like Texas, every red state at least. And it's leading to a true kind of like civil Cold War or something in between the lines. And it's not going to benefit anybody in the long run. So the hope is at this point, one of the only things that we can do is vote these people out of office and replace these laws, overturn these laws, repeal these laws. And so we don't have much time to do that. And in the meantime, people are going to die due to this. People are going to get hurt due to this. Think about the people who can, if they're mad about their wife wants to get an abortion, she has to like leave the state or something. I'm not sure exactly how it would be done. He just can go down to this grocery store now in Texas and buy a gun because he feels like it, because he's angry, without any waiting period, without any background check, really, without any real anything. And then the domestic violence and everything is going to peak in the state of Texas, on top of the deaths because of these illegal abortions, because I'm sure that there will be clinics that still do it, but they won't be able to do it legally under that law. So I don't know exactly what's going to happen, but I do have friends who live in Texas who will not be living in Texas next month.
I can tell you, I can guarantee you, the wealthy will always have access.
Yeah,
there absolutely will always be somebody that can perform a procedure for their daughter that happened to have a little accident. But if this is right here going to target directly the poor people of color, that's exactly what this is.
No, you're absolutely right.
And you have to ask, I want to know how many anti-choice people have adopted babies.
Exactly.
It doesn't seem like there's that many.
No, you're right on. And this is going to be something that we're going to be talking about, I'm sure, for weeks to come and months to come. I appreciate you guys taking time for me. Thanks so much, Rich, Sarah, Scott. Thanks so much.
All the way, brother.
Have a good weekend.
If you missed any of today's program, TheRickSmithShow.com, that's where you go to get the podcast. The Rick Smith Show app on the smartphone. Take the program on the go, wherever you go. And as always, you can email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. You got something on your mind, question, comment, a topic you want to hear? We here at the show will be happy to get it on and put in front of our all-star panel. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick at rick@therickssmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.